ज्ञानं स्मृतं तस्य ज्ञानं जनशलाकाय चक्षुर्निमित्तं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
श्रीमद् भागवतम् Canto 1, Chapter 19, Text 26, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Hymn is spelled here H-I-M. There's another hymn, H-Y-M-N. So who does this hymn refer to? Does anyone know who's from, who's attending the classes here regularly? Some refers to, who was here at the class yesterday? No one? Oh, all right. Well, I'll tell you. This chapter is called The Appearance of Shukadev Goswami. Translation: this son of Vyasadeva was only 16 years old. His legs, hands, thighs, arms, shoulders, forehead, and the other parts of his body were all delicately formed. His eyes were beautifully wide, and his nose and ears were highly raised. He had a very attractive face, and his neck was well formed and beautiful like a conch shell. For God, a respectable personality is described beginning with the legs, and this honor system is observed here with Shukadev Goswami. He was only 16 years of age. A person is honored for his achievements and not for advanced age. A person can be old by experience and not by age. Shukadev Goswami, who is described here as the son of Vyasadeva, was by his knowledge more experienced than all the sages present there, although he was only 16 years old. Srimad Bhagavatam, this word, Srimad Bhagavatam, is translated as the beautiful story of the personality of Godhead. Bhagavat means that which is in relation to Bhagavan. There are two Bhagavats, eight Bhagavatamara, Bhagavata Shastra, are Bhagavat Bhakta Bhakti Rasa Patra. There are two kinds of Bhagavats. The main one is the book Srimad Bhagavatam, and another is the devotee who is the receptacle of Bhakti Rasa. Both are required. Herein, in this chapter, is described the appearance of Shukadev Goswami, who is such a great Bhagavat that he has made the Bhagavat, such a great devotee that he has made the Srimad Bhagavatam more relevant. Shukumukhara Namata Dhrava Samyatam, that ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic knowledge has become sweeter by the touch of Shukadev Goswami. So Bhagavatam is no different from Krishna. So Krishna is the reservoir of all sweetness. Akila Rasamrita Murti, Rupa Goswami describes Krishna as Akila Rasamrita Murti, the very form of all nectar of rasa. Krishna is also the source of everything. Krishna is all sweet. He's the source of all sweetness. He is all sweetness. But nevertheless, his devotees make him sweeter by their appreciation of him. So Shukadev Goswami is being described here, the appearance of Shukadev Goswami. Many great persons were present. Actually, all the great rishis from all over the universe were present. Many of them
were mentioned. Ekat, Vitar, Cheta, some Vashishta, Gautam, so many of the great sages are mentioned, but that's all, they were just mentioned. They're not described. Shukdev Goswami is being described in some detail, even his form, what he looked like. Sometimes it's a bit comical, they describe. The Prime Minister arrived dressed in a grey jacket with white lapels, and they describe he was smiling. And they describe if it's an important person that they may describe in some detail. I may think, well, that's not very important. But this Princess Diana, they would describe what she was wearing wherever she went. It was different, every day different fashion. She was a walking fashion show. So she followed the same fashion as every conditioned soul by changing bodies. The purpose of describing Shukdev Goswami is that the rishis present, they were all acquainted with basic Vedic knowledge. Well, not just basic Vedic knowledge, but they were all acquainted or deeply absorbed in high levels of spiritual knowledge. But not only rishis, but every brahmana would be acquainted up to a recent time, every learned person, they would know basic Vedic knowledge of astrology, physiognomy, Ayurveda. This is just basic knowledge, just like in India, when someone goes for a job, they may give them some general knowledge quiz. It's just ordinary things you're supposed to know. They ask all kinds of funny questions, like from the ongoing TV shows and from cricket. And someone told me he went for an interview for a job in a bank, and they asked him which is the biggest bank in India. So these are things he told me that he got it wrong, and they still gave him the job. Anyway, so these are basic things which every learned person is expected to know. So when Shukdev Goswami entered that assembly, even though he was young, and age is generally presumed that as one gets older, one becomes more learned and more wise. More learned means that for a person who's actually educated, education doesn't stop when you leave school. It goes on throughout life. One is inquisitive to know more and more things. That is the sign of an intellectual. They want to know more and more about so many things, and then their understanding deepens by learning more and by experience in life. They're expected to become wise. There's a difference between being knowledgeable and being wise. So Shukdev Goswami was young, so it's not expected that he would be as learned as others who were present. Some of the rishis present, they were literally hundreds and thousands of years old. And Shukadev Goswami was only 16. Not only was he only 16 years old, but most of those 16 years extended his mother's womb. Of course, it was a very favorable womb to be in, because
because he was in the home of the Asadi. So, if you're in the home of the Asadi, then you can learn a lot of sin, even without having official schooling. That's why we find that the wives of the Brahmanas, even though they didn't officially attend Gurukul, but we find that they were often very learned, and I've seen myself this. There are still some traditional Brahmanas in India. If you look for them, you can find them. If you go to their homes, you'll often find that their wives are also very learned, although they never attended Gurukul as their husbands did. But by being in that atmosphere from birth, they just pick up so many things. Of course, the husband, when he, after marriage, he's supposed to teach his wife what he learned in the Gurukul also, at least some basics. Maybe not the whole course in detail. So like that, by association, Sangha Sandayate Kamaha, by association. Shukdev Goswami in the womb, he must have learned so many things from Vyasadeva. And not only that, he was a most learned person in the sense that he had absorbed the Bhagavatam from Vyasa. Vyasadeva himself had been busy most of his life compiling all kinds of learning which isn't directly, or as it's generally understood, is not directly concerned with the actual purpose of life. So the learning of those who are learned, that learning had been compiled by Vyasadeva and rejected by Narada. So after that, Vyasadeva compiled Srimad Bhagavatam and he taught that to Shukadeva. So Shukadeva, even though he didn't study those other things, or maybe because he didn't study all those other things and only studied Srimad Bhagavatam, was most learned. People in the modern age think learned means you have a university degree. But from the Bhagavata perspective, if one knows or if one is educated in Srimad Bhagavata, then he's fully learned. And a university degree, that is an obstacle. Jara vidya jato maya bhaivak tomar bhajane bhagdha anitya samsare moha janamiya jipe kare gadha. This university learning is simply a display of maya, and it's in this temporary material world which is meant for worshipping Krishna, it turns the human being who's going to serve Krishna into an ass. That's why last time I went to a program in IIT in Chennai, I gave a lecture called Overcoming the IIT Disadvantage. I said to them, you're all very learned, you've studied so much, you know so much about technology, but never mind, you can still become Krishna conscious despite all of this. Despite this disadvantage of being a puffed up fool and thinking you know so much. So Shukdev Goswami, he was not learned in Jara Vidya, in the Upanishads. Most of the rishis, they are learned in the Upanishads. The Upanishads are revealed by rishis. The Upanishads are eternal sound vibrations, which are sometimes extended human society and sometimes not. And rishis reveal them. They take them out of the ether. Rishi means mantra drashta, one who sees the mantras. So in one of the Katha Upanishad, described. There are two kinds of vidya, two kinds of knowledge. One which reveals the truth and one which covers the truth. So that which covers the truth is not really knowledge at all. But unknown to the rishis, unless one comes in contact with a Bhagavat, then even if one has the knowledge of the Upanishads, that may serve as an even more subtle covering over the actual knowledge, which is Bhagavat. All the Vedas are only meant for understanding Krishna. The Upanishads, mostly the Vedas, Chaitanya Vishaya Veda, they're mostly concerned with karma and the three modes of material nature. Then, coming to Vedanta, the end of the Vedas, there is the Jnana Kanda section. But that also, if one doesn't come to realize the message of the Upanishads, if one thinks that the ultimate message of the Upanishads is to describe the Supreme as Nirguna, without qualities, Arupa, without form, Anama, without name, then one is bewildered in understanding the actual message. And even though the Upanishads clearly state about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Tanishwaranam Paramam Maheshwaram, for instance, what could be more clear like that than that? He is Ishvara, he is in control. The Paramam Maheshwaram, emphasizing the point, he is the supreme great controller. Of course, there are those who attribute this statement of the Shvetashvatara Upanishad to Lord Shiva. But the point that there is a controlling supreme Lord is missed by the so-called rishis. And then those who even accept there is a supreme controller, he is the supreme person. They may be Vaishnavas, they may be liberated souls, but the essence of all the Vedic scriptures, in one sense, it's beyond the Vedic scriptures. And we find that in hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, we find the Vedas personified, praying to Mahavishnu, that please give us the opportunity to go beyond our own understanding. Because Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, which is the that is the special contribution of Shukadeva Goswami, that is Vedatita. We don't find beyond the Vedas, we won't Riksama Yajur Veda, we won't find in any of these Krishna dancing in Vrindavan, we find in Srimad Bhagavatam. Or it's real fun, not very open. So Shukadeva Goswami has given Sarve Veda Tatpadam Yamananti, what that point which all the Vedas are pointing to. They themselves, they may not be even aware of their own purpose. Even the Vedas themselves may be somewhat bewildered as to their own purpose of pointing to Krishna in Vrindavan. Krishna in Vrindavan cannot be understood simply from the Vedas. Vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atmabhato. What is not easily found in the Vedas is always manifest to the great devotee. So Shukadeva Goswami was such a great devotee. Through him, this Srimad Bhagavatam has been revealed. So, in one sense, we could say he's the most important person in the Bhagavatam, because if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have the Bhagavatam. Then again, you could say, from our perspective, Prabhupada is the, and we find the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, and Prabhupada is the most important person. No, I don't find Prabhupada in the Bhagavatam. I do. His name's right there on the cover. And he's there in every purport and every translation. So from our perspective, Srila Prabhupada is the most important person in the Bhagavatam, because we would never have heard of Bhagavatam. And even if somehow or other, through some university course, comparative religions or some such thing, we might have heard of Bhagavatam, then we have no entrance into that without Srila Prabhupada, because Srila Prabhupada is non-different from Shukadeva Goswami. Non-different in as much as he and Shukadeva and Vyas and all the great Bhagavats, they with one voice, they praise Bhagavan. Still, there are various categories of devotees. What Shukadeva Goswami is giving is even beyond the capacity or imagination or desire of those who are praising Lord Narayana in Vaikuntha. What to speak of being beyond the capacity of those who are praising Lord Narayana in Vaikuntha? It's beyond the capacity of Lord Narayana in Vaikuntha himself. So the position of Shukadeva Goswami is more than that of Narayana, according to Rasavicha, not according to Tattvavicha. According to Tattvavicha, our understanding of what's what, how everything fits in place, logically, systematically, Lord Narayana is certainly greater than Shukadeva Goswami. But from the point of view of Rasavicha, which is more important to Krishna himself, we don't find Krishna in Vrindavan discussing Bhagavad Gita. It doesn't mean we shouldn't discuss Bhagavad Gita, because we're not in Vrindavan. Krishna is simply playing with his friends, teasing the gopis, playing on his flute. So, for Krishna, when he's not in his kingly mode, or when he interacts with different devotees. So, with those who like to see him as a king, then he's very kingly. When he's with his intimate devotees, he behaves very intimately with them. Not only in Vrindavan, even in Dwarka, he tells Uddhava, natatame priyatama, atma yomya, na shonkara, na cha samkarshano, na shriya, naivatma chayatama. He tells Uddhava, my dear Uddhava, Brahma, who is directly my son, born from my womb, not born from Lakshmi's womb. Brahma is born from Narayana's womb. So, that's unusual. Usually the child is born from the mother's womb, but in this case, Brahma was born from Narayana. So he's the direct son of Narayana. And Lord Shiva is non-different in many ways from Lord Narayana. So Brahma, Shiva, Natata, Abhiyone, Nishana. Lord Balaram, who is the brother of Krishna. These are all intimate relations and devotees. Sri Lakshmi, who is his wife. So Krishna tells Uddhava, none of these are as dear to me as you are, And not to speak of these, even I myself am not as dear to me as you are. So this is very intimate. It's beyond the veil. It's unimaginable. To those who have a logical approach to understanding Bhagavan. But then Uddhava, being so dear to Krishna, he was sent to Vrindavan by Krishna, ostensibly to send a message from Krishna to the Vrajavasis, especially to the gopis, to placate them. That I know I said I'd come back, I will come back, but I'm busy dealing with all these demons. When I was in Vrindavan, so many demons were coming, so I'm just finishing them all off, and there's still one or two more demons to kill. When they're all finished, I'll come. In the meantime, be patient. Be satisfied. So the Uddhava was sent with this message from Krishna to give instruction from Krishna to the Vrajavasis, but Uddhava himself realized that I have been sent by Krishna. I am recognized as the greatest devotee of Krishna. Everyone knows, that means everyone outside Vrindavan, knows that Uddhava is the greatest devotee. He's even greater than Arjuna. Among all the Pandavas, the Pandavas are very dear to Krishna. Among them, Arjuna is the dearest. But Uddhava is considered even more dear than Arjuna. But when he came to Vrindavan, he discovered, by interacting with the Vrajavasis, who he was supposed to instruct on behalf of Krishna, that actually Krishna has sent me to Vrindavan to learn from the Vrajavasis what is bhakti. I thought I knew what was bhakti. I was the greatest devotee. I'm the greatest devotee. I came to Vrindavan and found out, well, I've got to learn. I don't know what is bhakti. So it is this bhakti that Shukadeva Goswami has revealed within the Srimad Bhagavatam. All of Bhagavatam is meant for, all the Vedas are meant for understanding Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam directly presents Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam was the only subject that could appeal to Shukadeva Goswami, who was beyond the study of the Vedas. He was Atmaram. He didn't want to go through any formalities of studying the Vedas, even from Vyasadeva, who could be a more qualified teacher of the Vedas than Vedavyas. But Shukadeva Goswami thought, this made the ask, he's in Maya. He thinks he's my father. He's going to be all affectionate to me, and then I'm going to lose it. So I'm going to lose my self-realization. So he, first of all, he stayed in the womb. He thought better to be in the womb than to be in this Maya, being with this Vyasadeva. Bad association. He was thinking like that because he was so detached. He didn't see any relationship. He couldn't conceive even of any spiritual relationship because he was Atmaram. He was satisfied in himself. Aham Brahmasmi, Brahmasmi, Aham. That was it. I am spiritual. So there's no need of any relationship, even with devotees. He didn't know what is a devotee. Of course, that's just temporary because Shukadeva Goswami, although appearing to be like a Brahmavadi, is actually the flute, not the flute, the parrot of Srimati Radharani. So he thought this Vyasadeva, and anyway, what's all this? I'm going to get Upanayana, become a Brahmin, study the Vedas. It's all mine. So he left her. And Vyasadeva, Apucha, Apucha, oh my son, came running after him. Shukdev was saying, yeah, I knew he was in Maya, just listened to him calling out, my son, my son. So he ran. Then Vyasadeva arranged that on the path that Shukdev was going, that some of his disciples to whom he had been teaching Srimad Bhagavatam would recite that on the path where Shukadev was walking. So as Shukadev was going past, thinking, I escaped from that Maya, I am one, one is I. And he heard the qualities of Krishna being described from Srimad Bhagavatam, specifically his mercy toward Putana, that even though she came to poison him and kill him, Krishna accepted her as a mother. So who is more merciful than he that I should take shelter of? This was, that's stated by who? Vidura says that verse, Maitre, the third canto of Bhagavatam. So hearing this, Shukadev felt some ecstasy. And he thought, that's not very good. What's this? I'm in Maya. I'm feeling some feelings. Feelings are not good. Feelings means attraction. But he thought, wait, but I'm self-realized. So if I have any feelings, these feelings must be, they can't be material feelings because I'm beyond material feelings. So they must be spiritual feelings. But I don't know, what's this spiritual feeling? I don't know anything about this. I better find out more. So then he asked, what's this? Where did you learn this from? He said, from the ass. He said, from the ass? Okay, I'm going back home. I'm going to learn. What is this? Of course, the answer wasn't in Maya. He wanted his son to come back and hear Srimad Bhagavatam, which he did do so. And Shukadev imbibed it. He heard that. Then again he left. But now he was not simply Atmana, but he was not simply satisfied in himself, but he was ecstatic with love of Krishna. So he was carrying that. And he didn't care. Already as an Amara, he didn't care about anything in the world. So he was just one. No need of any clothes. He was wandering naked. And people were mocking him, foolish people were mocking him. He's a madman. Just even now in India you find madmen wandering around naked. And everyone knows they're madmen. Of course, there's those Digamba Jains, they also. We don't find them in this area. In Gujarat sometimes you see some Jains out of walking completely naked. Because they're Digamba, that's what it means, naked. Covered by the directions. So they thought he was just a madman, and there were some village women and children mocking him and making fun of him. But when he, apparently by chance, entered the area at that place which is now called Shukta, near Delhi, fairly near Delhi, near Muzaffarnagar, I think the place is, in UP, Shukta. We came to that area where Parikshit Maharaj was sitting near the banks of the Yamuna, Ganga is mentioned in Bhagavatam. Actually, Yamuna, Ganga and Yamuna. He entered that assembly and Parikshit Maharaj was He had asked the rishis, what is the duty of every human being, especially if one was about to die? And someone was saying, well, my dear Parikshit Maharaj, you should perform sacrifices. And someone else was saying, you should do Ashtanga Yoga. And another was saying, you should discriminate between the self and matter. And in this way, they were all giving different opinions. But none of them satisfied Parikshit Maharaj, because from his birth, he was a great devotee of Krishna. So when Shukadeva Goswami entered, everyone immediately, because they were spiritual, and although they didn't have the right answer, they were all spiritually attuned people, or people of higher consciousness than the village women and the children who were, they saw Shukadeva Goswami, they just saw, he's a man, he's some mad kid who's wandered out of home and is just wandering around, and they thought he was just a big joke. But then the rishi's presence, they could understand this person is on. He's on a very high level of spiritual realization, more than we have. We should hear from him. We all don't know. They all became aware. They were all giving different opinions, and none of them were conclusive. And Parikshit Maharaj wasn't satisfied. They had all come together because Parikshit Maharaj was about to pass away. They all recognized Parikshit Maharaj as a great person, even though they were all Brahmins. And Parikshit Maharaj was superficially a Kshatriya. They all recognized he's a great person. They came from all their different planets and ashrams to be present at his prayopavas, his fasting to death. Anyway, he was going to die. But they recognize he's a great person. This is a great event that he is cursed to die. And even though he is competent to nullify that curse, he has enough spiritual power to do so. He's taken the opportunity to leave home for ultimate spiritual realization. And they understood that he's an important person. He's the grandson of Arjuna, who was the selected to hear the Bhagavad Gita. He, from his childhood, he's a great devotee of Krishna. So they all came and they all gave their different opinions, and none of them were conclusive. Then they understood that this is the arrangement of the Supreme Lord. Shukadeva Goswami, this person has come just by seeing him, by his very aura, by his presence, and confirmed by the auspicious marks on his body. He's a highly elevated spiritual person. We should all hear from him, which they did. And Shukadeva Goswami poured out the nectar of Srimad Bhagavatam through his lips, Shukumakadamrita. But even then, he didn't say everything. He kept something in secret. Parikshit Maharaj, everything was there, but not everything he said openly, because Parikshit Maharaj was competent enough to understand his intention. But many of the rishis present, they weren't actually elevated enough to enter into deeply into the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam. So the actual topic of Srimad Bhagavatam, the highest theology, beyond theology, is Rasa Vichara, how Krishna is enjoying. How Krishna is enjoying, and his enjoyment is not possible without Radha, who is the topic of Srimad Bhagavatam. And then she's also not to be discussed everywhere, among everyone. So she's only hinted, not even directly mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam.
Only her name is just prayer.
Arad, what is that? Arad is Hatitam Munam, Bhagavan Hari Vishwara. Just mention, she who by certainly she has best worshipped Bhagavan Hari Krishna. So just indirectly mention that, that is the whole topic, the actual topic. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu later came to announce clearly what is the topic. Gauraja Jugatiya Pavera Pakati Shakati Vaitokha. If Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had not come, who could have understood that the actual topic or the topmost understanding is the ecstatic loving feelings of the gopis of Vrindavan? No one could have understood this. Even in the Nimbarka Sampradaya, they worship Radha and Krishna. But the Radha and Krishna they worship is not the Radha and Krishna that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu worships. Same, but their conception is not that of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They have not entered deeply into that understanding. They worship Radha and Krishna as much in the mood of properness. They don't know the full limits of the parakya ras, the lawless love of Krishna and the gopis, or the separation of Krishna and his devotees, especially the gopis, and how in that pain of separation they feel, experience the greatest pleasure. So these are extremely esoteric topics. They're not really meant to be revealed even in the spiritual world, what to speak of in the material world. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu nevertheless revealed them. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami revealed them, which even in Chaitanya Bhagavat, they're revealed somewhat, but not clearly. But in Chaitanya Charitamrita, they are revealed by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who says that actually these topics, they're not meant for discussion, they shouldn't be. But anyway, I'm putting them in, because those who are devotees, they will appreciate, and those who are not devotees, they will never appreciate it anyway. Shukadev Goswami has appeared, his appearance is described in this chapter. Those who are devotees, they can appreciate what is the importance of the appearance of Shukadev Goswami. His coming into that assembly at the place of Parikshit Maharaj's departure is so significant that it's even being discussed now. In the newspapers there'll be some discussion. The appearance of Bill Gates came to India twice, isn't it? I think he came twice. When he comes, it's described in the newspaper. Bill Gates has come to India. Now India is blessed. Krishna came, Ram came, Prabhupada came. That doesn't matter. Bill Gates has come. Now India is Punya Bhumi. Is what they think. The rascals. Is how the rascals think. So it's impossible that Bill Gates coming to India will still be discussed in 5,000 years' time. In no one will have heard of Bill Gates. Even Bill Gates wouldn't have heard of Bill Gates. Bill Gates, you know, he'll have been already around this full cycle of 84 life species a few times. And you know, he'll be a toad or a grasshopper or a snake or something. Of course, he might go back to Godhead before that. We hope so. He has done some service to the Krishna consciousness also, given some donations. So, like that, in India, people think Bill Gates is very important. They don't think Shukadev Goswami is very important. Bill Gates' importance is ephemeral, like everything ephemeral, by the very meaning of the word ephemeral, it will be forgotten. But Shukadev Goswami is an eternal person, and his contribution is eternal, and it's of eternal relevance. And it's ever fresh, and just as he gave Srimad Bhagavatam and made it more sweet, so that by discussing the qualities of Shukadev Goswami, by discussing the Bhagavatam that he has given, that Bhagavatam, which is by nature sweet, becomes sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. Srila Prabhupada said that his most important contribution was his books. And he put most effort into this Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam has been praised by all acharyas. They recognize this is Krishna. We find the Bhagavatam a book. It's got how many pages is it? Bhagavatam is Krishna. Sanatana Goswami praised Bhagavatam. This is my life. Srila Prabhupada told us we should make Bhagavatam our life. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his principal disciple, who was later known as Bhakti Kadik Tirthamar. Of course, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was also a disingenuous disciple, his disciple of Gaur Kishore Babaji Maharaj. He was also very much, he was completely composed of Bhaktivinoda. But generally, he's considered officially the disciple of Gaur Kishore Babaji Maharaj. Not that Gaur Kishore Babaji Maharaj is considered any less than Bhaktivinoda Thakur. They're both Mahabharatas. It's not an ordinary term, just to throw out a Mahabharata. So, Bhakti Pradeep Tirtha Maharaj, his in an article he wrote about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the first point he made, so many points he made about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Not what he ate for breakfast, or how many times he cut his hair, not that this, we won't understand Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but such things. But the first point he made about his transcendental existence is how the Srimad Bhagavatam is very life of Bhaktivinoda. So Prabhupada told us also we should make Bhagavatam our life. Bhagavatam is alive, Shukadev Goswami. He's living in Srimad Bhagavatam. So if we live in Srimad Bhagavatam, we also live with Shukadev Goswami. If we live in the Deccan Herald, then we live with Bill Gates and we die with Bill Gates. If we live in Srimad Bhagavatam, we live with Srila Prabhupada and all the Bhagavatams. And we don't die because they never die. As Srila Prabhupada mentioned, or he stated in his dedication of the Srimad Bhagavatam, dedicated to my spiritual master, Om Vishnupada Paramahamsa Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. He lives forever in his instructions and the follower lives with him. So Srimad Bhagavatam is not a dead block of paper pages. It is living. It's Krishna and all his devotees. If we live in Srimad Bhagavatam, then we live. If we don't live in Srimad Bhagavatam, then we're not actually alive. We're just passing our days until death comes. meaningless. Ayo harati vaikam sambudyam astam jayam so tasyate yatito. What is that? Tasyate yachano nita uttamashloka vata. Those, the sun rises and sets every day. Tick, 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 tick. Cutting the lifespan of every person. Except those who hear about the glorious topics of Lord Hari. So devotees don't grow old. That's only a part. Devotee lives in Krishna. Krishna is never old. Krishna never dies. Devotee never grows old. Devotee's existence is eternal. Shukdev Goswami is eternal. Here he's described as 16 years old. That we say, just like we say, Prabhupada was born in Calcutta in 1896. This, we say, that's from our vision. We have to try and believe. Because we're in this world, we have to try and, our understanding is such that we try and place everything, try to understand everything in terms of everything else around. That's a relative understanding. But on the absolute platform, Srila Prabhupada was not born in Calcutta in 1896. He's eternally existed. And his teachings are eternal. And we live eternally with him if we follow those teachings, as he lives eternally with his spiritual master. Is there any question?
More absorbed
in Chaitanya Charitamrita.
So many descriptions of the universe and all that.
Bhagavatam description of the universe. Yeah, well, if we're actually, if we're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam like Parikshit Maharaj heard it, we won't find it boring.
So what?
The Chaitanya Charitamrita is the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. But actually, even to fully relish Bhagavad Chaitanya Charitamrita, we also have to have a background in so many scriptures. As the Bhagavatam is the king of books, Gantaraj, so Chaitanya Charitamrita is the emperor. But the emperor is also understood in relation to all his subjects. So just like in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's reference to this Savitri, Damayanti, well, you have to know what the reference is to. That's those stories in Mahabharata. There's reference to the Kushta Ramani, the wife of the leprous Brahmana. So all these are given to give examples of the love of Radha for Krishna. But if you don't know what that story, of course, it's given in the purpose, some of the things. But all these are required to appreciate. Just like if one doesn't have basic knowledge of mathematics, there's no question of going on to high mathematics. It serves as a basis. Or even if we do appreciate, at some level, Chaitanya Charitamrita, we will do so more by if we have the knowledge that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami wrote. It's clear from his writing that he wrote for people who had a broad knowledge of the Vedic literature, which was not uncommon, or was common. Of course, we can also get that benefit if we have these points, if we have the scriptures explained to us by people who do know, not just book learning, but spiritual appreciation by bhakti. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he told us to read Srimad Bhagavatam. He personally relished hearing Bhagavatam. So, if we find something lacking in Bhagavatam, we should understand that something's lacking in us. Then, anything else?
Seeing pictures of Shukadeva Goswami having a bluish complexion like Krishna.
Shukadeva Goswami, you see pictures of him having a bluish complexion like Krishna, no?
Why is he blue?
Why is he blue? Why are you brown? I have not seen any particular Shastric description of why he's blue. According to the Mayavadis, everything, nothing should have any form, shape, color, sound, smell, and no, it should be nirvishesh, without any specific characteristics. So, he's blue, you can say he's blue because he's not yellow. Or red, or brown, or black, or green, or white, or gold, or silver, or any other color you can think of. There has to be some color. Of course, we don't see bluish people these days. But the description of Krishna's cowherd boyfriend, some are red, and they're all different colors of it. Blue, he's thinking of absorbed in Krishna. That could be an explanation. I've not seen any particular explanation. If we ask about everything, why does he have conch shell shaped neck? Why was he 16 years old when he came into that assembly and not 16 years, 3 days, 12 hours and 45 minutes? And if you say, well, it was 16 years, what, 3 months, 2 days and 12 hours and 45 minutes, you're going to say, well, why not that in 43 minutes? And do we have to have an explanation of every detail? That's like the empiric scientists. They want to list everything, make a note, explain it. It may not be necessary. Why was Srila Prabhupada born in Calcutta and not in Delhi? Why did Krishna arrange it like that? Why was he not born in Navadvip? Why was he born to a cloth merchant and not a mridanga maker? I mean, there's no end to the question. He may not have answers for every single thing, but may not be important also. If there is some statement about why, there may be some esoteric reason. Do you know? I don't know. Even there's so many things our acharyas have given us, and we can't know it all. We're not aiming to be encyclopedias. If someone has that capacity, they may become an encyclopedia. They may go crazy also by knowing so many things and not being able to adjust it all in their minds. We find among the crazy people, I mean everyone's crazy, but those who are crazy crazy, that there's a relatively high proportion of highly intelligent people. Isn't it? Who knows anything about craziology, about crazy people? You'll find that often people who are very highly intelligent, they just become actually crazy. Because they have so many, there's always so many things going on in their head. And sometimes they go, bong! They can't fit it all together. And they go crazy. I know someone actually who is highly intelligent. I mean, very, very intelligent. And he said, I'm afraid that I may go crazy sometimes. It's easier even in my chat that I will. So. Why is this blue? We could make an investigation. Who put that on? How long ago? Why did he put it on? Maybe he went to the market and he could have chosen blue, yellow, red, green, yellow with red stripes, blue with white dots. Why did you choose blue? And we have to look into his psychology. When I was a child, blah, blah, blah. Otherwise we could just accept it's blue and let's play the character. There may be something in the science of physiology, I don't know. Many years ago, a god brother of mine, noting that I had a big chin, said it's a sign that someone is determined. Then recently another god brother said, oh, you have a big chin, that shows integrity. So what does it show? Determination or integrity? Both? Neither? I don't know. So, there may be many different opinions about so many things. So even if we do, someone may say, Shukri Koshan is blue because of this, and then someone may say because of that. You can just accept. If you want, you can do research and ask different people. You might become more confused. Unless you get an answer from our acharya, they may discuss this point. Maybe. If you find out, let me know. I'd be interested to know. What's your question?
I find that we worship the duties of Narayana Krishna, the mode of Krishna,
in the law. You have heard that we worship the deities of Radha and Krishna in the mood of Lakshminarayana, in the mood of foreign reverence. You have heard that because Srila Prabhupada stated that in one of his programs. So what's the question? What is the explanation of this? The explanation is that to worship Radha and Krishna as they are worshipped in Vrindavan is not suitable for almost all devotees and not suitable for a public temple either, where worship should be conducted formally. According to a system with rules and regulations, so that people in this world can become regulated in worshipping Krishna. At the moment there, a Sanskrita Kriya Hina, they're not undertaking any purificatory rites. They don't perform any activities for purification. So deity worship, people can take to that, become regulated, become purified. So we worship them as we would worship Lakshminarayana in a regulated way, like a king and queen. And even in Vrindavan, Radha and Krishna, they're also worshipped as a king and queen. Radhe, Vrindavan, Ishwari. So that is for purification, and that is proper for devotees who are not on the level of worshipping them as Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. And even the acharyas, just like Srila Prabhupada installed Radha and Krishna, and he worshipped them, he showed us how to worship them in a formal way. Formality here doesn't mean only formality, there's feelings also. It's not just formality. But that free love is not something to be shown publicly. We can hear it. We should hear and understand. This is Radha and Krishna. They are enjoying like this. But in this world, we worship them like this. Deity worship is generally performed by devotees on the Vidhima, the path of rules and regulations. And only, they may be worshipped on the Radha Mahal also. But then that would be only devotees who only worship the deities themselves. It's not a shared worship. Temple worship means a shared worship.